Welcome to another session of Culture and Communication. We have been talking about what it means to be a servant. Jesus came into this world to seek and to serve. And so if we want to be like Jesus, if we want to serve people, if we want to serve God, if we want to serve humanity, we must understand what it means to be servant. So we've been talking about that. And we said servant is something that takes time. It doesn't come automatically just because we declare ourselves to be servant. We become servant when other people begin to think of us as being and effectively serving them. So servanthood is really a pilgrimage. It's a journey, and we must understand that. But then the question comes, what does the journey look like? And as I have traveled around into various countries in the world, I've asked them what servanthood looks like in their culture, in their family, in their community. And they have given me hundreds and hundreds of answers, and the answers started to fall into categories, which you see here on the screen. It became evident that the first characteristic of a servant was somebody who welcomed you into their presence. It makes sense, doesn't it? You meet somebody, they smile, they invite you to do something, they want to have a cup of coffee with you or tea. Eventually, maybe you're invited into their home. They're welcoming you. There's an embrace here, a sense of let's be together. But also, in that atmosphere, you find yourself wonderfully relaxed. You find yourself feeling emotionally secure. It's a good place. You feel good about being there. This is openness, the ability to welcome people into your presence and to make them feel safe. We also looked at the concept of acceptance yesterday. Acceptance may be best understood if we think of the concept or the idea of rejection. Some of our most painful memories come when we have been rejected by people that we care about, friends and so on. And so acceptance is the ability to communicate that you value the relationship. You hold the other person in high regard. You give them a sense of worth and value. And we found that the way or the reason that we do this is because every human being is created in the image of God. And every human contact that we have with another person either nudges them towards an eternal corruption and horror, according to C.S. Lewis, or it nudges them towards an eternal splendor and glory. And so we want to be the kind of individuals that encourage the development of the image of God, that affirms them, that builds them up and moves them closer towards a God-likeness. Today, we're going to talk about trust. Trust, in the definition that I've given it here, and as the people, various people in the world have talked about it, is the ability to build confidence in the relationship. I just want to stop there. The word trust is equal to the word confidence. I have confidence that you're not going to hurt me. You have confidence that I'm not going to hurt you, either emotionally or physically. So trust is really a level of confidence that each of us are going to protect the other person, protect their interests, make sure that everything is okay with them. So the ability to build confidence in the relationship so that both parties believe the other will not intentionally injure them, but in fact act in the other's best interests. And there are some biblical concepts here. The concept of community, the concept of fellowship, forgiveness, and reconciliation. We'll talk about the skills in a moment. I think one of the most important skills that someone introduced to me perhaps 40 years ago now was the skill of asking a question. Here's the question they offered. Is what I am doing, is what I am thinking or saying going to build trust with that person or break trust with that person? Whenever there's something important happening, whenever the relationship is starting or in the early stages, it's very important to ask this prior question of trust. Is what I am doing, thinking, saying going to build trust or break trust? But I also have to go a little bit further. Is it going to build trust or break trust with the other person? Because trust is also culturally defined. For example, when the monkey took the fish out of water, he thought that was an act of trust. The fish would want to come out of the water. The fish would want to be placed in dry ground. The fish would now think highly of the monkey for taking him out of water, putting him on dry ground. The monkey didn't realize that that would hurt the fish. So in innocence, the monkey tried to build trust, but it actually broke trust. So trust has to be defined in the context of the other person. So when I gave my wife snow tires, you might remember that story, I asked the question, what will build trust? But then I answered the question from my own frame of reference, you see. And it didn't build trust at all. The tears that I thought were tears of joy were tears of disappointment. And obviously, she had a right to that. So I failed to ask, what will build trust with my wife? What will build trust with my husband, with my children, with my boss at work? What will build trust with my roommate at school? What will build trust with our neighbors if we want to get to know them? And in that way, we ask the prior question of trust and then try to take their perspective. What will build trust with them? Now, this prior question of trust sometimes gets a little bit sticky. I remember a conference that I was speaking at in Puebla, Mexico, a lovely mountain village, a small mountain town in the hills of central Mexico. And in the daytime, it was just lovely weather. And I had just finished talking about trust in that conference. And I was sitting in the afternoon, relaxing on the hillside, enjoying the mountains. And one of the college-age people came, sat next to me. And I said, how are you doing? He says, I'm doing pretty well. I like it here. And so then there was a bit of silence because I thought he should say something. And he did. He says, I was interested in what you were saying about trust. I says, really? What were you thinking? He says, well, I realized that I'm going to be graduating from university in another 3 months, 4 months, something like that. And I have never really gotten to know my father. We've lived in the same house. We have, come and gone and said hi and goodbye, but we've never really had much conversation. My father's a quiet person. He's not a bad person at all. He's quite a nice person, actually, but he's quiet. And so we've never had any serious conversations. And I'm realizing that there's a good chance that when I graduate, I'm going to move away and I won't even know my father. He says, I don't even know quite how to talk to my father. But he says, I would like to start a better conversation with him. In other words, how do I build trust with my father in such a way that we can talk about serious things, things that should be part of a father-son relationship? So I said to him, what do you think would build trust with your father? To kind of open up the door for conversation. Interestingly, smart fellow, but he couldn't think of anything. So I gave him some help. I said, what does your father like to do? When he's enjoying himself, what does he like to do? And he says, oh, he's by himself. He's alone in a room, and he's working with wood. He loves to make things with wood. And I says, okay, have you seen any wood around here that you particularly like? And he says, well, yes, he says, I've gotten to look for wood because I know my father likes it, and so I've just been attentive to it. He says, there's some really beautiful pieces of wood. You can see it all over here. Well, I grew up, my grandfather was a lover of wood as well, made things. I love oak and walnut and those beautiful woods. And so I was right in tune with what he was saying. And I said, what if you were to take a nice slab of wood that your father could put in something he was making, and would sort of be the nice centerpiece because of its beautiful grain and color. What if you were to send that to him? How would he interpret that? You know, he would really like that. I think that he would really like that, and he would find a place for it. Maybe he would even make something for me as I graduate from university, and maybe it would be his gift back to me. That would be great. And he did. Now, I never saw him again, so I don't know what happens. But you see, what are the things that we can do from the other person's frame of reference that will touch them, that will say, oh, that was a wonderful thing that you did. That was very meaningful to me. Thank you so much. And now the relationship is made stronger. Trust is culturally defined. It's not only defined just within a family, it's also culturally defined. I'll give another illustration quickly. A fellow by the name of Tim Stafford, he's a writer. And he and his wife are living in Nairobi, Kenya, for a couple of years, a short-term assignment there in journalism. And he got to know another fellow that he thought it would be great if our couples, these two single couple, not single people, but these two couples could get together, be friends. So they did. Here's what they did. They invited this other Kenyan couple over to their house. They said, would you like to come over on Friday night about 7 o'clock? We'll have a braai, which is a cookout or a barbecue. I'm not sure how it would be in Russian, but we'll have this time together, and then we'll just have some conversation. And he sort of laid out the evening and the time. So the Kenyan couple came over. They had a wonderful time. They stayed for a nice length of time. Eventually they left, and both parties were very happy. Well, in American culture at this point then, if there's going to be a friendship, in a week or so, the other couple invites you back to their house or out for tea or something. 2 weeks went by, 3 weeks went by, nothing. So, well, maybe we have to show more friendship first before they show friendship to us. So they invited them over again, same routine, wonderful evening, laughter, wonderful conversation, just enjoyed each other. The Kenyan couple left. 1 week went by, nothing. 2 weeks went by, nothing. 4 weeks went by, nothing. And so the American couple concluded that the Kenyans did not want friendship. The Kenyans, on the other hand, were very keen to have friendship. But they were concluding at the same time the Americans didn't want friendship. Both parties wanted the same thing, but both parties were concluded that the other didn't want friendship. How do you solve this problem? What do you think is happening here? Can you explain what's happening? Another cultural problem. But we have to interpret these. We have to figure out what's happening. Otherwise, we just make wrong conclusions, wrong assumptions. And we judge people. They're not interested in friendship. That's okay, we're finished. Larissa, you want to give it a try?
Well, yeah, I will give just one try, okay? I assume the Kenyan couple might have a worse house. Their apartment house was not quite as nice as the Americans or something, and they were a little, you know, ashamed. That would be like losing face for them, you know, to invite them over and to expose them to something that is not quite as comfy, quite as splendid, quite as whatever they saw in the American's house. It might have been an explanation why they did not try to invite them over.
Sure. Actually, that's a very good explanation.
But why they concluded that the Americans didn't want friendship with them, I don't know.
Yeah, see, so it doesn't
because
quite answer the whole situation, does it?
Because they showed hospitality, smiles and embraces and their time and everything, so that was a puzzle for me.
And I want to pick up on your hypothesis there, because it really is a good one, because often Americans entertain at such a level that the local people can't match it, so they feel shamed and then they don't know what to do. So that would be a good possibility, but it's not actually the explanation for this situation. But it does explain a number of other situations. In this case, Kenya came out of a colonialistic history. The British ruled Kenya for a number of years. And during the British rule, the British would periodically, two or three times a year, invite the Kenyan employees or the Kenyan families in their community in and have a nice, pleasant evening. But the Kenyans always knew that that was just a kind of a pleasant thing to do, that the British never did want friendship. They just wanted to show that they were nice people, and we get together and we have a nice time, but don't think that this is going to be friendship. So it was in the minds of the Kenyans that if you have to set up a time, a place, what you're going to eat, and what you're going to do, that's a formal situation. It's not a friendship situation. So when this Kenyan couple heard all of this, they thought, well, they're just like the British. They want us to come and have a nice time, but nothing really is going on. If you want to build a friendship in Kenya, you don't set up a time and a place and an agenda and have everything all organized in advance. You just pop in. So now I'm switching to Zambia, okay, because here the Africans would pop in, the Zambians would pop in and the missionaries, and they would often come after work. Well, after work was about dinner hour in the evening. So on the way home, they would pop in just to have some chat. If you got invited in for dinner, all the better. So, in fact, you would never go to an African place and not be invited in for food. It would never happen. In fact, I've gone sometimes, they actually have to go and catch the chicken, you know, kill it, take care of it, and then cook it, and all this time you're waiting because they have to feed you. That's part of the friendship. Well, so the Kenyan would come and knock on the door, and because it was the dinner hour and because it was after work, and because they hadn't said they were going to stop by, the missionary assumed that they had some need. Oh, you must need something. So they'll say, how can I help you? To the African, the Zambian fellow. And the Zambian says, well, I really don't know. I just was stopping by to say hello, popping in and see if everything's on. Oh, everything is fine here. Thank you very much. And the door closes, you see. Now, the Zambian was intending friendship. The missionary, by African standards, was rude. And now the door to friendship was closed. When Muriel and I were talking about this in Zambia, people all over the audience were all of a sudden realizing that they had been misinterpreting the other group. And now they knew how to interpret. So, but you see, in America, you don't pop in. That's rude. You give a phone call, say, can I stop by? And then if you want to tidy up a little bit or put an extra pork chop in the pan, you know, and because they might want to stay for a meal, then you do it. But the Africans, it doesn't matter. They will go hungry, but you will be fed nicely. We don't think in those terms. How do you build trust? It's culturally defined. And therefore, we have to ask, what will build trust with this person in their context? Let me give an illustration. By the way, trust is also fragile. It is broken quickly. So that after one or two times of coming to the door and not being invited in, or having this formal evening together but not doing it in the right way, people tend to say, okay, well, there's no trust here, there's no relationship, there's no potential for friendship. So trust is fragile. And that's why we have the concept of forgiveness. When we break trust, then we go and we say, you know, I am so sorry. I thought I was doing the right thing. I had good intentions, but I was the monkey. I didn't know what was happening. And you know, could we start over again? Because we were just not very well informed. We didn't know these things. We did some foolish things. We did what normal Americans would do. And so can we start? So the asking of forgiveness, the coming and saying, I'm sorry, this was my fault. Can we manage it better next time? That whole concept works. I found that most of the people in the world are very forgiving people. They want friendships as badly as any of us want friendships. They don't want tension. They don't want anxiety. They don't want friction. They don't want alienation. They do enjoy the peace of a good friendship.
Have you benefited from this teaching ministry? Have you found TVS videos helpful and relevant? Please consider supporting TVS with your prayers and financial gifts. For more information, please visit www.tvseminary.com.
Now, I want to show a series of things. Snoopy wants to build trust with that cat next door, okay? So this is his effort at building trust. I wonder what would happen if I tried to make friends with that stupid cat next door. I could show him my goodwill by extending my paw in friendship. And then he decides he's going to do it. By golly, I'll do it. And he puts on a hockey glove and extends his paw in friendship to the cat next door. Now, in the history of Snoopy, you never see the cat. You only see the effects of the cat, all right? So we won't see the cat here, but he's reaching out. Now, what do you observe about Snoopy? Tell me what kinds of observations do you make about him?
Well, it was a nice assumption at the very beginning, that stupid cat. I mean, if you make up your mind as to what kind of neighbor you have right from the beginning, that's how you're going to plan your actions towards him.
And if the cat is stupid, then you have the glove.
Exactly.
To protect
yourself. Work out the strategy proceeding from the fact that your neighbor is stupid.
We all have a view of other people or other groups of people. It's often unconscious. But with Snoopy, Charles Schultz, who's actually an evangelical Christian, Schultz, the author of Snoopy, tells us what's going on in Snoopy's mind. But actually, for most of it, it's at the unconscious level. When I was doing my workshops and conferences with Russian universities, one of the things that we found towards the end of the conference and during the time we would almost always finish with a nice banquet, we found that the Russians were always afraid that the Americans were going to bomb them and invade Russia. We, on the other hand, were very much afraid of the Russians and that they were going to send missiles and destroy America. We each had perceptions of the other, and those perceptions were probably, you know, as a result of the newspapers and what we heard from our governments and so on. And so we were fearing each other, but what we found is, in these conferences, that we were actually very much alike. We were very human. We just wanted peace. We wanted to be with our families. We wanted to raise our children. We wanted to enjoy our grandchildren. But at the same time, we had this perception that the Russian bear or the American aggressors or things of that sort. So we had a stereotype of what the Russian person was like. Not an accurate one, we found out, but it was there. What else do you observe about Snoopy here?
I think Snoopy, anyway, wants to build friendships. And not just wants to do, but he also wants to do something. Mm-hmm. And thinks ahead about this and gets ready, gets prepared, trying to be cautious and careful.
Yeah, we have to give Snoopy some credit. He's trying to do the right thing, but he's doing it not so nicely, not so well. There's a proverb that has helped me a lot. Anything worth doing is worth doing poorly the first time. So if it's worth doing, try to do it as best you can. But even if it doesn't work, if it's worth it, then you go back and you do it better. You do it in an improvement. So Snoopy's got some good intentions, good motives. Want to be friends, but the cat is stupid. Okay. Snoopy continues to stay in his doghouse. If we're going to be friends, it'll be on my turf, my territory, my place of safety. Okay? Well, let's see how things go. It's the holiday season, Kat, so it probably was Christmas time, I believe. It's time for you and me to forget our differences. It's time to be friends. So here I am extending to you the right hand of fellowship. There's Schultz's language. And the hockey glove gets shredded by the cat. Of course, we don't see it, but we see the effects of the cat. All right? What observations do you make now?
So it seems that sometimes it's not so easy to get friendship in place. So it's not just like you decide and it happens.
There's a certain amount of risk when we give ourselves to another relationship. And there's always the risk of injury, disappointment, frustration. Progress often is not in a straight line, but there's potholes and difficulties along the way. What other observations do you make?
Well, the cat might have interpreted the glove in the wrong way.
How do you think the cat interpreted the glove?
It might have seen a threat in it, and that's why it shredded it to pieces. Mm-hmm. It was like, are you going to attack me or what with that glove? Mm-hmm. And the reaction was adequate.
Does a hockey glove and friendship, do they go together?
Oh, absolutely not. If you talk about ice hockey, you know what it means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Snoopy's sending at least two different messages here. One is friendship, and it's time to forget our differences. But the other message is, I don't trust you at all. In fact, I might even, the cat might have interpreted threat. So there's the words, and then there's the nonverbal communication that's going on. And the cat looks at the nonverbal communication and realizes that may be the real message that's coming here. Igor.
And looks like Snoopy wants to do everything on his ground and on his terms, and he's going to establish his rules. It's time, it's holiday time. Mm-hmm. It's my time. I believe it's right time. I don't care what you believe. And it's the time to forget our differences. Well, in our culture, it's time to do this. I don't care about what is it in your culture. Mm-hmm. So quite often, stronger cultures trying to impose its rules on weaker culture.
A lot of observations there. Very good. Do you see anything here that might be a nonverbal communication?
The open arms.
So there's one message. But in the West, if the nose is up in the air a little bit, what does that communicate? Arrogance, yeah. I'm the good person here. I'm the one who's doing the right thing. Please, yeah, okay. Some people have noticed the wiggly smile here. Maybe Snoopy isn't quite as sincere as we would like. I don't know. It's hard to interpret some of these things. We don't want to misrepresent Snoopy, okay? But you are reading the nonverbals. Everybody reads the nonverbals. And so you have to take into account.
Well, maybe Snoopy had heard a sermon about loving your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And he just tries to make some practical applications. And first he thinks that he has to be very eloquent. So he thinks about his public speech. And he starts with a good idea, a big message. And he thinks that another person, or the cat in this case, would respond in the way he expects. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, even though we have good intentions and we have prepared a good speech, the response or the feedback might be surprising.
You're giving Snoopy wonderful credit, and it's altogether possible that would be the case with Snoopy. Snoopy and the cat have had a history together. Snoopy has existed, I think, for maybe 25 years or so, and there are whole big books, of Snoopy cartoons. So there is a history here. We all bring a history into a situation. So when I came into Durban, South Africa, and began to teach at the college, I didn't start out with a blank sheet. There were a number of other Americans that had been there before me, and some Canadians as well. So when they saw me in light of the history of all the other people. If there were good people that were there, they would say, oh, we have another good person. If there were some that were not so good, they say, well, we don't know, or maybe not, most of them not so good, but I don't think that was the case. But then they would say, oh, we've got another American here. Oh, sheesh, you know, that kind of thing. So we never come into a situation without a history. It just doesn't exist.
And in this case, I'm not even sure Snoopy means it for good, if it's going to be a long-term commitment or if it's just a holiday thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Since there is this holiday, let's make peace for a couple of days, and then I'll go back to my old habit of chasing you all over or something. Yeah. And the cat might suspect that, too.
Yeah. So there are a lot of dynamics going on here. Just from a simple cartoon, we can interpret so many different things. We can come at it from different ways. And so if in a cartoon we can do that, so in life as well. Well, let's continue and see if things get any better, any clearer. Well, we have a mediator, all right? We talked about the mediator, the role of mediator yesterday, and now Charles Schultz brings a mediator into the situation. His name is Linus. And he says to Snoopy, I hear you tried to make friends with the cat next door. Snoopy says, stupid cat. I offered him the right hand of fellowship, and he almost tore it off. Linus says, maybe you shouldn't have been wearing a hockey glove. Maybe he thinks you don't trust him. Snoopy says, I trust him, but my hand doesn't. Okay, let's take this frame by frame. What's happening here? Let's start out with Snoopy just for a moment. Why does he say stupid cat? Nina?
I think he doesn't like the result of his try. He expected that the cat will accept his friendship, and he's kind of angry, and he doesn't want to do any more attempts to do any friendship. He has his decision. He thinks that the cat is stupid.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He starts out with the assumption that the cat is stupid, and maybe he has some evidence for it. But maybe there's also evidence that the cat is just not going to play Snoopy's game here. But if you came, and then when this happens, he now has evidence that the cat is really stupid after. Sure, of course. No rational person, no rational cat would do that. So he now has evidence. Isn't it interesting how when we start out with an assumption, we look for evidence to support that assumption, even if the evidence is a little bit stretched. Mm-hmm. But now Snoopy has evidence. What is the role of the mediator here? This is very important now, because we're at a kind of a dividing point, a crisis point. There's going to be no hope, or is there hope yet if the mediator is able to do the job? So what is Linus doing in this first frame? The role of a good mediator always starts right here. What do you think, Larissa?
Well, I think that he is the one who has the cool head.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to look at the situation objectively and see not who's right, who's wrong, but to see the context of it.
Mm-hmm.
He is the one who needs to try to analyze it and then see how he can bring the two parties together without a conflict.
Yeah. He could have gone back and said, Snoopy, you were thinking the cat was stupid from the beginning. What was the matter with you? You're still on top of your doghouse. Your nose is in the air. You have this, you know, it's a holiday season. You know that you can't just legislate friendship because it's a day on a calendar. He could have said all of those things. But those were peripheral things. And the mediator gets to the core. What's the, in the case of Joshua 22 last session, what does this altar mean? That was the issue. Exactly. What was your intention? And so he goes back to Snoopy's intentions and motivations. And they were good. They were beautiful. They were the right ones. Now, Snoopy is laying down all of a sudden. What does that mean? he's probably emotionally exhausted. But also, I think that perhaps he's given up. It's a sign that I've done everything I can. Whatever happens now is the cat's thing. But notice on what paw is the glove? And what paw do you see here? And in what condition is the paw? It's not injured, right? Okay. So, and maybe this is stretching it, all right? I'll confess to that. But the cat attacked the barrier to trust. He didn't attack the person. Whether Schultz intended that, I don't know. But Snoopy goes back and says, I offered him the right hand of fellowship, and he almost tore it off. So when we feel injured, rightly or wrongly, but when we feel injured, we think about it. We talk about it. Somebody has to be the object of our conversation. They have to know that we tried and we were injured and so on. As irrational as some of it might seem, generally speaking, we have to talk with somebody about our pain, our rejection, even though we may have been quite responsible for it. So here's the role of the mediator. What was your intention? What's the core issue here? Now, the second role of the mediator is captured in this third frame. Maybe you shouldn't have been wearing a hockey glove. Maybe he thinks you don't trust him. What's the issue here?
Well, I believe he is trying to offer more interpretations of the situation, to broaden the perspective, because Snoopy's perspective is sure narrow.
Mm-hmm. This issue, there's actually two things going on here. One is the word maybe. He uses it twice. The notion of maybe softens your communication. It's like, are you willing to consider this? Is there a possibility here? That's the idea. The other item, which you brought up, and I think is right on target, let's look at this through the perspective of the cat for a moment. Maybe the cat thinks this way, but you see, the maybe softens it. Is that a possibility? And so Linus is just absolutely brilliant, or Schultz is brilliant here in this character of Linus, in how he handles this difficulty now of probably trust being broken on both parties' side. Snoopy feels that the cat blew it. The cat feels that Snoopy blew the opportunity. Well, what do you make of this last frame? I trust him, but my hand doesn't. We all rationalize. We all like to find blame. If we can find something to blame, somebody else to blame, it's a way that we don't have to take responsibility. And if it's your problem, if it's your fault, if I can blame you, then you are responsible for changing, not me. I'm okay the way I am. See how easily that makes it for us, and we can find somebody else to blame? Well, Snoopy does this quite often. He blames other parts of his body. It's his way of handling the situation. Well, shall we continue and see what happens? Linus now continues in his role, and he affirms Snoopy. I think you showed the true spirit of Christmas. Snoopy quickly agrees. But now we're ready for an alternative. We did it poorly. Can we do it better? But now I think you should try it again. I think you should offer the cat next door your right hand of fellowship, but without the hockey glove. And he looks up and says, what are you doing? Snoopy says, I'm having a farewell dinner for my hand. So Snoopy he's ready. We got to give him a lot of credit. He's willing to take the advice of his friend Linus, but he's pretty sure it's not going to turn out any better. And, of course, dogs always like to have something to eat. But this is his farewell dinner. So here's Linus now. A word of affirmation. There's something in encouragement. There's something in affirmation. Apparently, the pituitary gland in our human body releases certain kinds of chemicals when we hear encouragement and affirmation, and when people say something good about us, that just gives us a sense of calm, a sense of yes, this makes me feel good. This makes me happy. I feel better. And so without knowing that, Linus affirms. It's always good to affirm people because it puts them in a position that maybe now they're willing to take some advice. Now they're willing to listen to wisdom. Now they're willing to consider what maybe they should do better. Affirmation is so powerful. And so he tells Snoopy what he thinks he ought to do. But notice again, just as he used the word maybe up here, notice I think. This would be my opinion. But you have to decide. When you say you should, that's your decision. And the person can then blame you. But when you say, here's what I would do, or here's what I think you might consider, then the decision still rests with them, and they take ownership of their actions. They take ownership of this situation. And so Linus, to me, is just this wonderful, wise fellow. He's often reading books, philosophy books, so now he finally comes through as this wise person. All right? Now, we're getting close. Okay, Kat. Is that correct? Yeah. This is a season of love and peace. Apparently not much joy, but love and peace anyway. He wants the cat to make sure that he understands, that the cat understands what this is all about. Even though I know you hate me. I think that's so funny. Even though I know you hate me, I'm going to extend the right hand of fellowship. So he's still on top of his doghouse. His nose seems to be still in the air. There still seems to be this air of super importance and, you know, nobility or something. His little paw is shaking back there. But he's at least moving in the right direction, okay? We got to give him credit. And the paw goes out. Now, 20 million people are going to read this tomorrow morning in the newspaper. Maybe 60 million, I don't know. What should the last frame be? You're Schultz now. How would you make this last frame? There's one more to go. That's going to be the end. What would you do? What would you put in that frame? Some people have suggested that it should be Snoopy and the cat hugging or kissing or something. Well, we all know that that's pretty unrealistic, but that's what they would do. They would just jump immediately into this wonderful relationship. It doesn't work that way. So what would you put? You want to send a message to your American audience. We're approaching Christmas time. This is the time of goodwill. This is a time to make things right if they're not right. It's a good time to make a start so that hopefully it's not just seasonal, but it will start us on a long journey of friendship. So Schultz is actually sending a message to American culture here. This is not a cat and dog story. This is a story about people who are different, people who have alienated themselves somehow for some reasons. And now he wants to make his contribution to our American culture that we can be more friendly, we can be more trust-building. Nina, what do you think?
Well, I would put Snoopy and the cat in the next slide, or how do you call it? Mm-hmm. But the cat would have a face similar to Snoopy's because the cat would be afraid. Probably the cat also will be with his right hand and
extended.
Uh-huh. And probably they will be friends, but not in the next slide, because they're both afraid, but they already made this first step.
Okay, that's good. So, since we never see the cat, but we could put the cat's paw as an offer of shaking hands with Snoopy. Is that correct? Is that the kind of thing? But you said the cat, what kind of expression would the cat have if we saw the whole cat?
The same expression Snoopy has frightened and confused.
Oh, I see. Yeah, very good. Okay. Yeah, sure, that would work. That would be a step forward. That would be reasonable, too, to expect that could happen. Anybody want to suggest another conclusion? By the way, let's ask a question here. Is shaking hands, is that part of canine dog culture? Or is shaking hands part of feline cat culture? Or both? Have you ever seen a cat shake hands? Well, actually, in the West, they shake. That's the first thing most dogs are taught is how to shake hands. So you put a hand out, the dog puts its paw up. So dogs in the West do shake. So Schultz is taking a cross-cultural situation here, but no cat ever. You know, the story in the West is that dogs think of you as friends, cats think of you as their servants. So anyway, that's just a little, you know, canine feline cultural difference. Igor.
And if you look at real dogs and cats' life, we can see that main weapon of dogs is our teeth, mm-hmm. and they use hands only to hold food. Mm-hmm. But cats use both teeth and paws. Mm-hmm. So looking from cat's perspective, it could be the gesture of I'm ready to fight.
Oh, interesting. Well, here's the last slide. And this is a candy cane, which in America children get a lot because it's a sweet, and sometimes you see them hanging on Christmas trees. And so it's giving Snoopy a sweet. It's a nice gesture. It's a positive step. And the cat says, okay, the friendship can go one step further. And so Schultz was, I think, quite brilliant in how he ended this series with Snoopy and the cat. Trust is usually built in small incremental steps over time. And if trust gets broken somewhere, it's important for one or both parties to say, you know, I'm sorry, I just didn't intend for that to happen. But I wasn't thinking very clearly. I made a mistake. Can we continue? You know, can we continue to value and develop the relationship? So Schultz is saying that yes, in small ways, strong relationships are built. And then sometimes we have to say I'm sorry. Sometimes we have to repair some damage that we didn't intend, but it was a mistake. And very often the other person is quite happy to move ahead on that basis. Any comments now? Let me tell you just one bit of information. There's some data, some research that was done primarily during the days of the Billy Graham Crusades. He's still alive, but not very well. 93% of all the people who come to Christ come on the basis of a trust relationship. So if somebody comes to a Billy Graham crusade, it's not like they lead them to Christ, but they go because somebody that they trust takes them. If they come to Christ in a church service, somebody takes them there that they trust. And so trust is so important. And then the other 7% would be mass media and literature and things like that, that people would come into the Christian faith. So trust is important. What will build trust from your perspective? Then I change to build trust from your frame of reference. Now, let me give you one other, and this is a cartoon on the issue of how not to build trust. This person is in prison. He's in a jail cell. And he has a friend who's underneath the floor, and he's going to saw a hole so his friend can escape. So this is his saw. We don't see the friend down here. But you see, if you don't know the other person's frame of reference, if you don't know their context, what will build trust from this person's frame of reference? You see, so when when this person is finally done, it's going to be a mixed blessing, okay? Yes, maybe we can escape, but how will I escape because I have no legs now, kind of thing. So the point here is that what will build trust from the other person's frame of reference. And in trying to help, sometimes we do severe damage. So even help to serve must be serving, helping from the other person's frame of reference. Okay? Any comment from any of you? Your comments are so good, I don't want to miss any of them.
I'm trying to think that this prisoner would yell to the person who wants to save him.
Yes, but in this case, apparently not. Maybe he's struck dumb, I don't know. But yes, that would be the normal thing. Sasha?
Sometimes when we read in 1 Corinthians about spiritual gift, and there's a spiritual gift of help, and we think, what can be supernatural about help? Help is so natural. But this shows that natural help sometimes can damage. So mm-hmm. when there's a spiritual gift of help, you can help in the way that you not damage. And yes. it's not natural to humans. It's when what Holy Spirit does in the church yeah. sometimes.
Thank you. We're finished on this session.
Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 10, 11. How to give to TVS Ministry. You may give online at efca.org/givenow. In the description place, write Russia Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Or make checks out to EFCA. Write on the check memo line, Russian Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Mail to EFCA Donor Services, 901 East 78th Street, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55420-1300. Or send your gift through PayPal for tvs.gift@gmail.com.